Welcome to another episode of Learn Buddhism. I'm Alan Pito. Of the two main branches of Buddhism, Theravada and Mahayana, Mahayana is marked with the path of the Bodhisattva. All practitioners in Mahayana, regardless of the Buddhist tradition, are on the Mahayana path, which is the Bodhisattva path. But what is the Bodhisattva path? What is a Bodhisattva? And does Theravada recognize any of that? Well, we're going to talk about that in this episode. First, let's define a bodhisattva. So bodhisattva is actually made up of two words, bodhi for enlightened and sattva for being. So a bodhisattva, in its most basic terms, is an enlightened being. Venerable Master Xingyun said, "A bodhisattva is a great practitioner who is walking on the path toward Buddhahood by benefiting all sentient beings as well as themselves." So I think that's a great explanation of a bodhisattva, because we're going to have three different types of bodhisattvas. There are going to be the bodhisattvas that you might see when you go into a temple, for example, like Guanyin Bodhisattva, and you see them as these essentially celestial bodhisattvas. They are beyond what we may see physically on this earth. Then we see ordained bodhisattvas. These are your monastics. And then we can also have lay bodhisattvas. That's us. Now, ordained and lay bodhisattvas, we are typically going to be of the unenlightened variety. So we are not enlightened bodhisattvas. We are unenlightened bodhisattvas, but broken up into either if we're ordained monastics or lay persons, lay Buddhists. Whereas you see the other type of bodhisattva, like I just talked about, like Guanyin, they are going to be enlightened beings. But what they are all doing, what all of us are doing inside Mahayana, regardless of the Buddhist tradition inside Mahayana, the branch of Mahayana, we are all on this path towards Buddhahood. So a bodhisattva just doesn't stay a bodhisattva. Their goal is to eventually become a Buddha, because that is the best and greatest way to help and benefit all sentient beings. So as a bodhisattva, they can definitely do that. As an enlightened bodhisattva, yes, you absolutely can. As an unenlightened bodhisattva, of course, there's things we can do as well. But becoming a Buddha, that is when you can help liberate other sentient beings. And we're not just talking about in Mahayana Buddhist cosmology, just this earth. I mean, far as the human realm, as we call it in the realms of rebirth, goes way beyond what we may call quote-unquote humans. So anywhere there are sentient beings and where one can become a Buddha, yes, you can essentially become a Buddha there. But that's getting a little bit too far in advance. Let's go back to bodhisattvas and why they're so important. Where did bodhisattvas even come from, this terminology we're using? Well, it may surprise you that it came from the Buddha himself. So Shakyamuni Buddha, Gautama Buddha, he was a bodhisattva in countless, numerous lifetimes before he became the Buddha. And that's an important part here, because both Mahayana and Theravada recognize those past life tales of the Buddha and that path he took. So as I mentioned at the very beginning of this episode, does Theravada recognize bodhisattvas? Absolutely, because they recognize that the Buddha, Gautama Buddha, was a bodhisattva in many prior lifetimes, because he was on the path to become a Buddha, the Buddha of our era, which he became when he was born as Siddhartha Gautama. So before he was born as Siddhartha Gautama, he was actually a bodhisattva in a heavenly realm where bodhisattvas reside. And he determined when and where and how he was going to be born into his last existence, where he knew he was become a Buddha. And he was a bodhisattva in all these prior existences, because even further back, he made a vow before a Buddha back then that he wanted to also become a Buddha. So that set him on the bodhisattva path that accumulated with him becoming the Buddha of our era. And that's important because that's where you see it kind of differ between Mahayana and Theravada. In Theravada, they hold very strictly, if you will, to that. You have to have made a vow before a Buddha that you want to become a Buddha to be on that Bodhisattva path. And it's really reserved for remarkable, special beings, just not anybody. Although you can have, for example, very revered teachers, monastics, inside Theravada that are considered Bodhisattvas. But more broadly, is there lay Bodhisattvas? No. You know, if they're even ordained Bodhisattvas, rarely, as I mentioned. So it's very, very niche. It's very, very special, if you will, inside Theravada. Whereas you see inside Mahayana, it's different. And this is because there's also Mahayana-specific scriptures, sutras, that relate to the Bodhisattva path. But there, they're going to say, yes, any of us can be on this Bodhisattva path, and any of us can be unenlightened Bodhisattvas on this path as well, due to our vows, our actions, and everything else, which I'll talk about today. And that really sets Mahayana apart, which is why you kind of see the growth of Mahayana became so popular that even in the tradition that predated Theravada in ancient India was very interested inside Mahayana and those teachings. And so you started to see that creep into what we may now call quote-unquote Theravada. But of course, that is a whole other topic, but you see where it differs right there. It became very populous. It became very popular with the lay practitioners who really didn't have a part in Buddhism like we might have nowadays. But now, lay practitioners and even ordained monastics had a different role and a different part and a different path to take that was more engaged and allowed them to progress in a way they couldn't before, in a path that was revealed this way. So no longer do you have had to have made a vow before a living Buddha eons ago to be on the Bodhisattva path. Now it's recognized that, yes, all of us can be on that Bodhisattva path, which is where Mahayana gets its roots from. And I think it's important to recognize right now that you don't have to be like these celestial Bodhisattvas and have all these different ways of helping sentient beings, or feel overwhelmed that, wait, do I have to really help all sentient beings and everything like that? What we're talking about are the actions we can take right now, the mindset that we can take right now, the vows that we can take right now. We're sentient beings. We're laypersons. And even monastics, they're not enlightened either. So we all realize we are working from the place we are at, but nothing is stopping us from making a vow now to go on the path now as best we can, because we recognize that becoming a Buddha is our path. And that's something that Westerners typically get stuck on because it's hard to comprehend. I have to become a Buddha. And for a lot of Westerners, they may not even realize a tradition they're practicing in is Mahayana, is the Bodhisattva path. For example, Zen is very popular among Westerners because they're related to no superstition, it's just going to be meditation, I'm going to become enlightened in this lifetime. That is the Bodhisattva path as well. So even inside what we popularly call Zen, and there's many different traditions, that is also the Bodhisattva path. The goal is to eventually become a Buddha as well, not just to become enlightened, like you might see inside Theravada, become an Arhat, and hopefully end the cycle of rebirth. No, it's also to become a Buddha eventually through the Bodhisattva path. So let's talk about that part, because that can get very confusing. So I have to become a Buddha. How is that even going to happen? Because even if we look maybe just historically, in Buddhist historical terms, there hasn't been a lot of Buddhas, and there's only one Buddha of an era. So if we even look at the Buddha of our current era right now, Shakyamuni Buddha, also called Gautama Buddha, he was born 2,600 years ago, and that's when he became the Buddha as well. And that's 2,600 years, and there's only been one, right? And we have to wait for his teachings to be lost before we see the next Buddha of our era, which is Maitreya, which is also recognized in both Theravada and Mahayana. And right now, the Bodhisattva that is going to become the next Buddha, Maitreya, is in a heavenly realm, just like Shakyamuni Buddha, Gautama Buddha, when he was a Bodhisattva before, he was also in a heavenly realm. So yes, and that's going to take a long time. I think I've saw some explanations. It could be eons or million, hundreds of millions of years. Who knows? It's very far in the future, right? And if we just look at that, we can become very discouraged. Okay, how many people are on this planet right now? And you're saying that theoretically, if all of us were on the Bodhisattva path, let's assume that, right? Well, that's billions of people. And if there's only like one per era, how will we all become a Buddha, right? That's really where we as humans, as sentient beings, we get really stuck because we have a certain concept of time. If we even look at our lifetime right now, which we consider long, you know what? It's only really, you can look at it in months, and it's not really a long time. And we are just here for a blip. You know, in Buddhism and some Buddhist traditions, they compare it to like a flash of lightning. We think we're here for a long time, but not really in the big scheme of things. So when we look at time, when we look at our existence and where we live, we only think of this planet. We only think of this realm right now. But there are many places that we can become a Buddha, and not just as a human being, as we describe it right now. So there, yes, there is the human realm inside Buddhism, but the human realm is just what we label it. It's for sentient beings like you and me who are kind of having a lot of enjoyment, I would say, in life, and a lot of suffering or satisfaction in life. It's really the accumulation of that, all that dukkha, all that, you know, that the satisfaction and satisfactoriness, where we are able to hear the Dharma, we are able to practice the Dharma. This is where the Buddhas go, right? It's not a heavenly realm, it's not one of the lower realms. It's like this right mixture that helps us on that path. And that can exist in a lot of different places. So when we think about how vast our universe is, and we don't have any idea what's out there from a scientific point, because we really can't even go past our solar system. We've only had one real big attempt at that, and that's with the Voyager spacecraft, which have passed our solar system, but still, we're not even close to any other solar systems. So this is a big thing where we are in one part of the universe, and we don't really know. And I'm not going into that detail to kind of talk about that topic, but basically, in Buddhism, it's not just this planet. This is something that's not defined just by human beings, as far as Buddhism and being a Buddha, but is all we know right now and we have a concept of and a relationship with. So inside Mahayana, for example, yeah, absolutely. You can become a Buddha anywhere and anytime in the future. And we shouldn't really focus too much on that. That is our end goal, because when we look at a Bodhisattva, they are not on this Bodhisattva path just to be a Bodhisattva. They do it because they have this mind of a Bodhisattva, which I'm going to talk about in just a second. But they want to become a Buddha because that's really how they can really help others, because they've cultivated that mindset. And that's why they've made the vow to become a Buddha in the future. But they're going to be able to help people in ways that they can as a Bodhisattva that they probably could do in other ways. So when they become a Buddha, that is root accumulation. That's really where they want to get to. But that can take a very long time. And as I've been kind of mentioning, you know, for us to have this concept of like, oh wow, eons or however long it might be, we can't even think past like 100 years, you know, just like in our lifetime. Because a lot of us aren't going to live that long. So that's a really hard concept to understand, because we want to be very goal and success oriented in this lifetime. That's where you see a lot of people, especially a lot of Westerners, going, I must become enlightened in this lifetime, or that's really their goal. And that's why there's so much into meditation. And there's nothing wrong with that, but that's very unlikely. And I'm not going to go into kind of like the decline of the Dharma and all these other different topics, but that's very hard to actually do, even if you become a monastic. So as a bodhisattva path practitioner, if you will. We are slowly going, you know what, we don't really understand all of this. We're not going to be perfect as maybe lay bodhisattvas, unenlightened lay bodhisattvas on this path. But we realize as we learn more and more about Buddhism, as we practice more, as we are start to develop these different qualities, wholesome qualities as Buddhists, it does change us in a way where we're going, I want to take that next step. I want to be more engaged on the bodhisattva path. I want to eventually become a Buddha, which could even be for a lot of people in Mahayana, that is still, even for them, hard to grasp. But they realize, I know I don't have what it takes, if you will, in my current mindset to be a Buddha, but I know inherently we can all become Buddhas because the Buddha said so. And so the bodhisattva path, I'm setting forth on it, hopefully through future existences, and as we continue to build our practice and the other future practices, the karma that's going, the vows that are going, it will accumulate into an enlightened bodhisattva, then eventually into an actual Buddha. So it's something that we are on realizing. We got a lot of work to do, but time becomes not so much an issue. So even if it took eons, yes, that means eons in samsara, cycle of birth and death, but there are little side trips and there's different things we can do that are making us, I don't want to say more in control, but now we have specified our direction, our path, and the precepts, additional precepts we take as even a lay bodhisattva are helping us stay on that path, which are very important to us inside Mahayana. So when one wants to become this unenlightened bodhisattva, whether ordained or lay, they are going to take the bodhisattva vows. And it's typically during a retreat or ceremony. And what you are doing, you're going, I am formally committed to this path. So even though you may be inside Mahayana right now and you are practicing, you may have not taken the bodhisattva vows, and that's perfectly okay. It's usually one of the last things that a lay practitioner, for example, would do. So taking the triple gem, of course, is foundational. Then you also see the five precepts. But then when one is ready, they can take the bodhisattva precepts. And this is where they are going, you know what, I've been practicing for a while. I want to be on this path. So whether you have taken the vows, the precepts yet for bodhisattva or not, that is the path inside Mahayana. So let's talk more about a bodhisattva. So they do have, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, there's this mind of a bodhisattva. It's made up of three things. There's aspiration for awakening. So bodhicitta, they want to become enlightened. They have this mind for enlightenment. They realize that becoming enlightened is important. Not to go, hey, look, I'm enlightened, because that is what's going to help them help others. They also have great compassion. It really ties into helping all sentient beings. So they have this mind that they are very compassionate. They want to help others. And that goes into the third part, skillful means. So they want to become enlightened so they can help others. Due to their great compassion for the needs and the suffering of others, and they're going to be having this mindset where they're going to use skillful means, ways that are going to be able to speak to people, to help people in ways that they understand and can help them best. And that makes up the mind of a bodhisattva. And that makes them so efficient and so helpful to us because they have that mindset. Now, for you and me, we would love to have all of these things, but we are going to work on them in different ways. And we do that through our Buddhist practice. So for example, maybe our compassion is not as great as a bodhisattva right now, but we have the seed for it. And we can plant more seeds of compassion through what we learn, what we practice, and also what we do. Aspiration for awakening, for enlightenment. Well, that's going to be the more we understand, the more we practice, and the more we start engaging with life, we are seeing, okay, the reason I want to become enlightened, not for myself, but for others. So for myself and others, I want to become enlightened, not just for bragging rights, or to have some type of experience, but because it's the way I can help express and do something with that great compassion I have, and the way that I am able to use that great compassion I have because I want to become awakened, enlightened, and I have achieved that is through my skillful means. And for you and me, we are probably not going to be very skillful. And that's why it's very impressive when we see the Buddha, we see enlightened beings like Bodhisattvas. They're very skillful in the way that they help us. And so skillful means allows them to speak to people in ways that they understand, to show them and help them in ways that they understand. That sometimes is beyond our understanding. But ask the mind of a Bodhisattva. But how did he get there? Well, they take vows. And as I mentioned, there are precepts as well. And that's something we're going to take. There's five precepts. There's basically 10 major precepts that we will take as a unenlightened, unawakened Bodhisattva. It's the five precepts we normally take, and they're a little bit modified as in the Bodhisattva context, and we have five more. But it all starts with our vows. Like, we want to become a Bodhisattva because we want to be on that path, right? So the four vows are: sentient beings are limitless, I vow to liberate them. Afflictions are endless, I vow to eradicate them. Teachings are infinite, I vow to learn them. Buddhahood is supreme, I vow to attain it. So a way we can sum that up is also by this quote here: teaching Dharma is my duty, benefiting sentient beings is my mission. So Bodhisattvas say that as well. So if we look at, you know, the very first vow there, sentient beings are limitless, I vow to liberate them. That sounds overwhelming, because you may have also have heard, well, Bodhisattvas, they are pushing off enlightenment or even becoming a Buddha until they're able to liberate all sentient beings. And you hear that a lot, right? A Bodhisattva is here to liberate all sentient beings, which sounds like impossible, because it kind of is. So if we become a Bodhisattva, we are not going to be able to liberate, help all sentient beings. But it's that mindset, right? If you don't have that mindset, if you have that doubt, like, well, there's no way I can help all sentient beings, you know, that's physically impossible or whatever, right? Scientifically impossible. Well, yes, you might be right, but the Bodhisattva's mindset is they're not even worried about that. Their mind is that great compassion, right? It's like, I want to help them. And so that mindset is, I need to help all sentient beings. Now, ultimately, they're going to become a Buddha and be able to help sentient beings in a much greater way, like what we saw with Shakyamuni Buddha, Gautama Buddha. But it's that mindset that doesn't allow these seeds of doubt or of confusion, like, oh, how can you help everyone? It's because they want to do that. We see those afflictions are endless. I vow to eradicate them. Yes, you know, afflictions are all around, and they want to end them on this path. The teachings are infinite. I vow to learn them. They are thirsting, if you will, for the teaching, for the Dharma, to become a Bodhisattva, to become a Buddha, right? And if not just that intellectual understanding, these teachings are just like we see them when we take the Triple Gem Refuge or recite the Triple Gem. They're precious jewels, right? So the Dharma is one of the jewels. They see this as this beautiful, shimmering jewel is the Dharma, because it is the way to free not only themselves, but others. And then accumulates with that final vow, Buddhahood is supreme, I vow to attain it. So, could that take a long time? Absolutely. But they are on that mission. Like you saw right there, teaching Dharma is my duty, benefiting sentient beings is my mission. So they can best accomplish their mission by becoming a Buddha. But that will take a while. So while they're a Bodhisattva, perfect. They can help sentient beings that way. And it's all a great way to really think of a Bodhisattva. They are on this mission because they have this proper, wholesome mindset. And they want to become a Buddha, but they got what they need to accomplish that. So what are they doing to develop themselves? Like, if we were to look at a Bodhisattva, what makes them a Bodhisattva, right? I talked about the mindset, talked about their vows, right? Well, there's also the six perfections or paramitas, and there is giving, morality, patience, diligence, concentration, which you may sometimes hear as meditation, and wisdom, which we often call prajna or prajna wisdom. And those are these perfections that really shape a bodhisattva. Now, for us again, you know, we are lay practitioners, lay bodhisattvas. We're working our best on these as well. Doesn't mean we are going to be 100% on these, of course, but we are going to do our best to cultivate these six perfections. So how does this bodhisattva walk the path to becoming a Buddha? Well, there's actually five paths, and so let me talk to you about those. There's accumulation. So you possess a strong desire to overcome dukkha and have renounced the worldly life. So again, we're talking about a bodhisattva. So if you are a lay practitioner right now, a lay bodhisattva, this doesn't mean that, you know what, I need to just give up everything right now. No, you don't have to do that. We can be absolutely lay bodhisattvas, lay practitioners on this path and still have a householder life. But they're showing that a bodhisattva, there's different paths that they can take. And these are the ways that one ultimately becomes a bodhisattva, an enlightened bodhisattva. We see preparation as the next one. You start practicing meditation and have analytical knowledge of emptiness. Wow. So emptiness is a big topic, especially inside Mahayana. And if you could even understand that in this lifetime, congratulations. It's very, very challenging, but it's so crucial to us inside Buddhism. So preparation, what are we doing to help us advance towards becoming a bodhisattva? The next one is seeing. You practice profound meditative concentration on the nature of reality and realize the emptiness of reality. Wow, we're getting pretty advanced here, aren't we? So as we are on these paths, right, we progress on the path, what are we doing to constantly move to that next level, if you will, right? There's meditation comes next. You purify yourself and accumulate wisdom. Wow, remember prajna wisdom, like one of the six perfections? So meditation of and by itself is not all you need. But as you get closer, you need to start cultivating, just like we saw with the Buddha. And then finally, we see consummation. So this is where you have completely purified yourself. We are at the final stage. We've purified ourselves of all these different, afflictions and defilements and unwholesome thoughts and actions. That's where we want to be. So the path of a bodhisattva may be long, may be challenging, but what's the other path? Well, it's just staying in a cycle of rebirth, and that's not great. And it's just going through the same motions all the time. Becoming a bodhisattva is a wonderful way to progress on the Buddhist path. Now, before I end all this, I need to go back to Theravada again, because, you know, as I mentioned, like, you know, they're very much about becoming an arhat, and that's the way to do it, and it's best to do that as a monastic, of course. But they recognize the bodhisattva paths as well. As I mentioned, is typically for one who's going to become a Buddha, very rare, exceptional beings, but is not out of question that you're going to see very exceptional teachers be considered bodhisattvas as well. So I think it's important to reinforce that both Mahayana and Theravada both recognize that the bodhisattva path, not the arhat path, as we may come to imagine Theravada to be, as the highest. It's actually the bodhisattva path in both is recognized as the highest. And to kind of go further into that, as I mentioned, that Maitreya Buddha is the next Buddha of our era, and he is a bodhisattva right now, recognized in both branches of Buddhism. So it's recognized unanimously, but between both branches, that the bodhisattva path is the best path to be on, because one is going to become a Buddha then. It just really differs on who and why and how we think is the best path for everyone, right? And so Theravada, very traditional in the way that they're looking, well, when Gautama Buddha was on this earth and we had arhats because of him, that is the path we're just going to take. And that's fine. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that path. And as a lay practitioner, lay Buddhist, I've always said either branch of Buddhism is good for you. You're going to cultivate the right qualities, morality, conduct, all these different things in both branches of Buddhism. It's perfectly okay. Inside Mahayana, again, we are more focused on that bodhisattva path. It doesn't always have to be as long as you think it is. For example, there's a tradition called Pure Land or Pure Land Practice, where maybe you can go ahead and experience enlightenment, become a bodhisattva inside, for example, Amitabha Buddha's Western Pure Land, which is extremely popular inside Mahayana. And it's basically a bodhisattva, a Buddha training ground, a boot camp or university, whatever you want to call it, where you can, under the guidance of a celestial living Buddha, become a bodhisattva, become a Buddha. And that's the best place to do it. So there's paths, there's ways that this can happen beyond the long path we saw Gautama Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha take. And so that's, of course, a whole different episode and topic, but there's many, many different ways to do that. So it's just recognized inside Mahayana that everyone should really take the bodhisattva path, because just going to the level of an arhat, and there's, you know, different stages of arhats, but that is not enough in the entire context of Buddhism. So Mahayana does not look unfavorably on Theravada or becoming an arhat. They don't. They just recognize that thinking that you're escaping samsara, you know, achieving nirvana as an arhat, it looks like that's the end goal, but it's not. You're actually, if you're an arhat, you're going to be on a bodhisattva path, whether you know it or not at the time. So in Mahayana, arhats, all the arhats, even like all the Buddha's arhats, they are actually all on the bodhisattva path. They're all going to become Buddhas in the future. They've achieved a very significant, important step, and that's going to be their path. Whereas inside Theravada, if they've achieved that non-returner stage, right, they're not going to be back in cycle birth and death, they've achieved that ultimate enlightenment, they don't have to become a Buddha. They've escaped it. In Mahayana, the teachings say otherwise. They're saying it does look that way, but as you know, our concepts, our teachings in the Mahayana branch, especially about emptiness and dependent origination and everything else, it just looks that way, but it's actually not. There's really no separation between samsara and nirvana. It's a much very intellectual, deeper topic, you know, than this whole episode. But basically, you have to really achieve that full enlightenment, not enlightenment of an arhat, but a full enlightenment as a Buddha. That's why inside Mahayana, you don't see an arhat path like you see inside Theravada. It's just recognized that the arhat path is fine to do. There's nothing wrong with it, as I mentioned, with Mahayana. It's just almost like a side detour that's, in Mahayana, unnecessary, because you're eventually going to have to become a Buddha anyways. You're going to become a bodhisattva and a Buddha anyways. So why not just go on the path that's conducive to becoming a bodhisattva and thus a Buddha? And really, if you really sum it down, that's honestly the biggest difference. So there's nothing where Mahayana looks unfavorably at the arhat or arhant path. It's just they see it as more kind of like a delay. And so there's a path for a bodhisattva that is taught inside Mahayana. So both branches look at bodhisattvas and the bodhisattva path very favorably. It's just how they go about approaching it. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have any questions, I would love to hear back from you. You can definitely reach out to me on my website, lmpo.com, or on social media, or respond to this podcast. Thank you, and I'll talk with you in our next episode.